Dan and I, while making sure that we had our wills, financial powers of attorney, advance directive, health care decisions, and family trust, realized that when one of us died, what would the other do while waiting for our sons, who were 2,500 miles away, to arrive? Dan has promised to let me go first. But in case he doesn't keep his promise, how was I going to get him 2,500 miles across the country to a rural Episcopalian church graveyard in Church Creek, Maryland? Before I left, to be sure that I got back, I personally bought two lots in Maryland, because I was concerned at that point, if you had seen the Santa Clara Cemetery, which is 20 years ago, it truly looked like Boot Hill. The sign was hanging down with only one fixture on the side, and I thought, I don't want him to slip me in there. I want to go back home. Then I thought, knowing Dan, he'd want bagpipes. And I thought, how are we going to get bagpipes in St. George and in Church Creek, Maryland? That is when we thought of Dan's Rotary friend, Mark Heiner, who is with Heinemann Hughes Mortuary here in St. George. Mark came to our house several times to help us discuss all the decisions that needed to be made. He emphasized that making decisions ahead of time relieves so much stress at the time of death. Not only have we made the decisions, but shared them with our sons so they have input too. I would like to add that you can change these decisions or modify them at any time. For example, what if our health deteriorated and we moved back to Virginia and Mark is out here? And he told us how he could take care of that for us too. You never know what your final years are going to be like, but I liked having a plan and also knowing that it has some flexibility. Dan and I have used Mark's plan and feel much more assured that we have a plan in place. So I would like to introduce Mark Heinen with Heinemann Hughes and thank him very much for coming.
Thank you so very much for having me. Thank you very much for that wonderful and heartfelt introduction. First off, I want to make sure that you guys understand and know exactly who I am, where I came from, and how I got to be here, and how I chose this unique and strange profession that I am currently in. And the hairline does not lie. This year, I'll be celebrating my 20th anniversary of practicing as a funeral director within the state. And it's been an interesting journey thus far. Originally, I am from Ogden, Utah. How many of you know where Ogden is? Okay? That's why I carry a knife and a gun. Okay? Kind of a scary little place in northern Utah, but not bad. But that's where I was raised. And I was raised near a mortuary. It was owned by the Lindquist family. Lindquist Mortuary on Washington Boulevard, about 34th Street. As I grew up, I courted and dated a young woman out of Provo. She and I got married in 1993, and we are the proud parents of four beautiful children, two boys and two girls. Right when we got married, though, in 1993, we had an opportunity to move into a very small apartment that was attached to the Lindquist Mortuary. This happens all the time. If you don't believe me, ask Ken. He'll probably tell you. What they do is they have students or couples move into the mortuary apartments, and in exchange for the rent that you would pay, you're actually an on-call junior member of their staff. So for 7 days out of the month, I would wear a pager, and I would get called into the mortuary to help, sometimes late at night, sometimes during the day, depending upon what my schedule was. And I would assist the funeral directors in exchange for the apartment. It was a very easy decision for my wife and I to make since we were both attending Weber State University at the time and we needed a way to, you know, actually pay for it. So as we moved into the mortuary, it didn't take but a few days and all of a sudden that pager went off. And it was 2-3 o'clock in the morning, and the funeral director said, Mark, I need you to come downstairs, and I need you to go out on a call with me. There's been a death out at a home. We're going to go receive the body and bring it back to the mortuary. And I said, fine, no problem. That's what I signed up for, so I'm ready to do it. So I put my suit on, went downstairs, met the funeral director, and went out on that call. Didn't really think anything of it. Came back, went back up to my apartment, went to bed, and that was the end of it. About 3 weeks later, I was at my local grocery store, and I was just pushing my shopping cart down the aisle, and there was a little man that came walking towards me. And he kind of looked at me and cocked his head to the side and walked a little bit closer and kind of put his hand up. And then he put his hand on my cart and he stopped me. And he said, it was you. You were there, and I never got a chance to thank you for the kindness and for the courtesy that you extended to me and my family on the night my wife died. I never really wanted to be a funeral director, but I knew I had to be one from that day on, and that's what I have been doing. I'm one of the lucky ones. They say if you love what you do, you never feel like you'll work a day in your life. Well, here it is 20 years later, and I honestly don't feel like I've worked a day in my life. I really do love what I do. Now, for those of you that are here, I really want to thank you and congratulate you, just like Mitzi did, on being here today, because there's only two ways you get to meet with somebody like me. You either meet with me because you want to, or because you have to. Okay? This is the better way to do it. Okay? It definitely is. No matter how hard I try to define it or to describe it, the fog of emotion or the cloud of grief that people are in when they walk through the mortuary doors, not because they want to be there, but because they have to be there, I never do it justice. The only way you can truly understand what it is if you shadow me around at the office at the mortuary for a couple of days and you see that and you truly witness it. It truly is hard to define and describe, and I'm glad that we have the opportunity today to speak candidly about a topic and a subject that's actually been in the dark for far too long. It's kind of a taboo subject or a taboo topic, but the reality is it's not a question of if, it's a question of when. And what we want to do is we want to make sure that we're making decisions together and we're not making decisions alone. Because what happens, and I hope it's a long, long time from now, but you're going to meet with someone like me again. And it's not like today. You're not going to meet with me because you want to. You're going to be meeting with me because you have to. And the reality is that someone that you gave love to and received love from has died, and you're going to be making decisions, irreversible decisions, within a matter of just a couple of hours. And it's decisions that you're going to make basically by yourself. And I would hope that by and through our conversation today, you'll understand the importance of and be able to see how valuable funeral planning is. And so what I'd like to do is actually just go through a little experiment with you today. And that is just to create a hypothetical situation. Hypothetically speaking, if something were to happen in your home this evening, would your family members know what to do tomorrow? Now, I see a few people that have nodded their heads, and they say yes, and that's fantastic. I applaud you for that. But for the vast majority of us, probably not. You know, more often than not, what happens is if there was an event that happened in my home tonight, my wife would actually go to the funeral home. Sometimes it's on the very day. Sometimes it's the day after, one of the most difficult days of her life. And I say that, I hope it's one of the most difficult days on her life, because honestly, I hope she loves me, you know. But she'll be meeting with a funeral director, and the very first question that funeral director is going to ask her is going to be, when and where would you like to have the services? And after that particular question is asked, guess what happens next? About 90 more questions are asked. 90 more responses are required. Decisions must be made, and they must be made in a very short period of time, and they are irreversible decisions. And so that's what's important about making sure we ink down some instructions and we actually get things done ahead of time, because we don't want to do this alone. We want to do it together. We don't want to make these decisions all by ourselves. We want to make sure we can have that bagpiper, right? Yeah. And he was hard to find, too, especially back east. But we want to make sure that things like that happen, because the next question that happens is we're going to go ahead, the funeral director is going to be asking my wife on that particular day or the day after, who's going to be giving the eulogy? Who are the pallbearers going to be? What clothing is Mark going to be dressed in? Would you like him to be dressed in something from his existing wardrobe with the special socks? Or would you like something new purchased for him? What music is going to be played or performed? What passages are going to be read? What musical selections? What soloists? You know, what are the favorite musical numbers that you wish to have performed? Who will be officiating at the services? Decision after decision after decision. And once those decisions are actually made, she'll be taken into an area of the mortuary where she's actually going to have a display of different caskets and different urns that are going to be available. And again, another decision is going to be made. The funeral director is going to ask, would you prefer this particular casket or this particular casket? Is it going to be one that's made out of metal? Is it going to be one that's made out of wood? Is it going to be one that's made out of steel? Decision after decision after decision. 9 times out of 10, we don't talk about it beforehand. But I would imagine, just to give you guys some information, when I actually went through this particular process, and mind you, I only made my funeral plans about 10 years ago, even though I've been doing it for about 20 years now. But my wife and I finally put things together, and we actually did our plans about 10 years ago. She was surprised at the casket that I chose, and I was surprised at the casket she chose. She chose a cherry wood casket. I probably would have put her in a maple casket if it was my decision, all up to me. And I went ahead and I put myself in a hickory casket. I want to make my pallbearers suffer. It's going to be nice and heavy, okay? But, you know, it surprised her, because honestly we thought it would have been the other way around, that I would have chosen a wooden casket that actually had a darker finish to it, and she would have chosen one that had a lighter or more natural finish. But we flip-flopped, so it was a little bit strange. But we get to make all these decisions, and the funeral director is going to keep going, because we're not done just yet. We've still got to talk about the cemetery property. Is there going to be a burial? Is there going to be a committal? Is there going to be a full body burial? Or are we going to have a cremation and have the ashes buried, or have the ashes placed into a niche at the cemetery? Or are they going to be kept in the family home? If so, we still have an urn to select. We still have a burial vault to select. So many different things that need to be done. Now, just so you know, the statistics will go ahead and be this way. The average individual has the opportunity to go through, make funeral arrangements, and be responsible for the funeral once every 20 years. So it's not something we have a whole lot of practice at, and I'm glad for that. You know, thank goodness that we don't. But because we don't have a whole lot of practice at it, it's a very scary area. It's not something that we're comfortable with. We don't have a lot of knowledge about it, so we kind of shy away from it or stay away from it. And so that makes it even more difficult. But one thing that we want to do is we want to make sure that we all understand that it's not just a question of if, it's a question of when. The good Lord's going to call us all home someday. I hope it's a long time for me. I hope it's a long time, you know, for all of us. But that day is going to come, and if we are prepared for it, the better we're going to be. I don't think that there is a better way to demonstrate the love that you have for your family more than actually taking care of them and setting things out and setting up instructions. I have sat at tables just like this, and I've sat at tables just like this with family members, and I've opened up a file and a folder, and it was as blank as this particular document right here. Absolutely nothing on it. And we've had to fill it out together, and we've cried together because we didn't know which way to turn, what decision to make. I would ask, you know, is this what we're going to do? They would look at each other and say, I don't know. Is that what Dad would have wanted? I don't know. Is that what Mom would have chosen? Difficult to do when you're making it on that particular day all by yourself without any input from the individual. On the flip side of the coin, I've also sat at tables just like this with families. And I've opened up documents, and they've actually, the children have seen Mom and Dad's handwriting, stating that these are the options that I would like to have. This is where I'd like to have my service. These are the passages that I would like to have read. I would like to have these musical selections played. These are the pallbearers that I would like to have. I would like to have a viewing and a visitation. People don't recognize me without my glasses on. So let's go ahead, keep my glasses on while the casket is open. But before you close the casket, take off my glasses and keep them in some type of a memento box. Instructions like that truly demonstrate the love that you have for one another. And instead of crying at those particular tables as we're making arrangements, we're laughing together, remembering and celebrating the life that was. It truly is remarkable. When we get to that particular time, when it's all said and done, the hardest question that I have to ask is, how would you like to take care of this today? Okay? You know what? It's one of the most difficult questions to ask. And honestly, there can be a little bit of what's called emotional overspending or grief overspending. I see it every once in a while. Ken, you've probably seen this before, where you have family members or siblings that are there making the arrangements. Well, this is the last thing we can do for Mom. We better get her something nice. This is the final tribute for Dad. Better get him the best. And they take what could be anywhere from a $3,000 to a $5,000 service, and they turn it into $7,000 to $12,000. And they add a financial burden and a hardship to an already emotional situation. And this is where some of these instructions can be so beneficial to the family. At this particular date and time, I would like you to have a budget of XYZ dollars. Please respect my wishes. And from there, you can actually not only prearrange it, but you can pre-fund it as well. Because if it costs a dollar today, what's it going to cost tomorrow? Dollar and change? Everything goes up, right? Dan and I were just discussing the new gasoline tax increase. Everything goes up. Cost of the funerals, cost of services always go up. But if you can, and you have the ability to, you can always prearrange and pre-fund, so whatever the cost is today, pay for it today, use it in the future when it's needed at no additional charge or cost to the surviving family members. Okay? What I have brought for you, for those that would like, is a very small planning guide, which actually will help in doing and fulfilling these certain things. It's actually just a little generic guide, which, as you open it, you find that it has a personal history area or statistical information. The first thing that the funeral director needs is we need to gather all of the information that's required for the permits and the certificates. Well, you can't really do a whole lot unless you actually have one. You can't access the bank accounts. You can't access the life insurance proceeds. You can't access benefits from the VA or from the Social Security Administration until you have the certificate. Well, every piece of information that's required for the death certificate is right here. So all the information that my wife needs to create my death certificate is right here. But what happens to that information when I go horizontal? It goes horizontal with me, okay? It's actually quite important to go ahead and fill this out, in its entirety, as complete as you can. That way the family has it, and instantaneously the funeral director will be able to create the necessary certificate and permits. Also, there is the memorial instruction area. This goes ahead and lists information that says, okay, this is where I would like to have the services. This is who I would like to have officiate. These are my favorite passages from the Bible. I'd like to have them read. The musical selections. What about the jewelry? Would I like to have any jewelry on if I'm going to have a viewing and a visitation? Prior to that viewing and visitation finishing, would you like to have that jewelry removed and returned to a certain child or spouse or significant other? And then from there, we list exactly what those services would cost so that we can create a template or a guide for the surviving family members. Does anyone see the importance of this particular document? Can you see how valuable it is? Okay. A few people are nodding. I haven't made anybody fall asleep yet, have I? Okay. You don't dare fall asleep? No, I'd check you for a pulse. Don't worry. And I didn't bring the big car, hon. I only brought the little Mini Cooper out in the parking lot, so you wouldn't fit. So don't worry. Nobody's going anywhere. Okay? Also included in the guide is just information that will help. Just questions, general questions that everyone has regarding Social Security, veterans benefits, insurance benefits, pensions, and various other items. Okay? There's a lot of questions that do surround this particular industry. Not many of us actually have a funeral director on speed dial. Okay? You really don't. I mean, this is the thing. You take a look at, I know and I have a relationship with several different individuals in my life. I have a relationship with my financial planner. I have a relationship with my attorney. I have a relationship with, believe it or not, I actually do have a relationship with my barber. He doesn't cut the top of my head anymore. He only takes care of this part, okay? But I do have a relationship with him because he provides goods and services to me and my family. I know the gentleman in the post office, that assists me with the packages that I send to my mother, my father, and various other family members. I have a relationship with that individual. I even have my preferred, person at the grocery store. I like to go through, his or her checkout line because they're pleasant and it's nice to talk to them, because they provide goods and services to me and my family. Well, do you have that same relationship with your funeral director? Because honestly, one day they're going to provide goods and services to you and your family. The most difficult part of this job for me is meeting a family for the first time at 2-3 o'clock in the morning in the hospital. And the only reason that I am meeting them at that particular time and at that location is because someone that they gave love to and received love from has died. I would so much prefer to have a relationship with the family, with all members of the family, before I am needed. That is what I hope to have, and that is my true purpose in coming here, is to make sure that we can generate those relationships, get to know each other a little bit better. Because again, I'm sure that there are questions that you may have. You've got a great resource right here in Ken. I'm going to go ahead and go out on a limb and say you've got a better one right here. However, it truly is important to get to know someone like me, not necessarily because you have to, but because you want to. And that is the key of what I want to make sure that you guys understand. And I am very grateful that I've had the opportunity to be here with you today. I just wanted to make sure that the presentation was a little bit short, because if there are questions that you do have, I want to make sure they get answered. Does anyone have any questions that I can answer for them at this time? Yes, dear.
If someone is embalmed, how long can you keep the body? So, for example, if they die on a Tuesday.
Okay, and let's say we've got family coming in from out of town or something like that for services, or the body is to be shipped to another location for committal or burial.
It may be better for people to come.
Mm-hmm. Well, for me, personally, the longest that I've ever actually held a body without, go ahead, do the preparation, do the embalming and whatnot, I've held it for longer than a 2-week period before the service.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean,
a couple days.
Yeah, absolutely. 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 More often than not, there's going to be at least 5 to 7 days.
Okay.
Because we have so many different, there's so many people that live here in the greater St. George area that are from different parts of the country and have family scattered all over. And so when they do have those types of services and the embalming is done, then we go ahead and arrange for transportation of family members to come in. And more often than not, takes, 4 to 7 days. So, yeah, not a problem at all. Question over here?
Yeah, I prepaid for a cremation.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, all of the funeral homes here in Washington County, there are several different crematoriums. I know that, of course, we have one, the Metcalf family, the Spilsbury family, they have theirs. And so what happens is when you did that arrangement so many years ago, there were funds set aside for the transportation down to Vegas. And because that's not going to be utilized, what would happen is those particular funds that are dog-eared or earmarked for the transportation would be refunded to the estate because they would not be utilized. Okay? Any other questions? Yes. Well, I have an old fool discount. Senior discount, that's right. I need to see your AARP card first, and then I'll go ahead. No. What it is what I've done is with the partners that I have in the mortuary, what we have done is we've grouped together the most commonly requested services of the mortuary. What it is you have three different costs that are associated with a funeral. You have the services of the funeral directors and the staff.
How much is that?
Well, it's what I'll get right to it in just one sec. And then you have the merchandise, which is going to be the casket, the burial vault, and things of that nature. Then you have the cash advance expenses, which are traditional funeral expenses, but they don't originate at the funeral home. Flowers, costs from the cemetery, opening and closing of the grave, headstone, things of that nature. Sales tax, copies of the death certificates and the permit. And so what it is we've grouped together package options that include two out of the three. And we actually have packages that begin at about
$4,500.
$4,500. And that's for a traditional service either at the mortuary chapel here at the church. Includes viewing and visitations. Includes all of the equipment, the staff, as well as all of the vehicles that would be needed, the embalming, the together with, like I said, the viewing, the visitation time, and the committal service at the cemetery. It also includes your choice of a steel casket, any color you would like, and it also includes the cement burial vault, which is required at the local cemeteries here in Washington County. The only additional costs that you have are, again, the cash advances, which would be copies of the permit, the death certificate, opening and closing of the grave, sales tax, things of that nature. There's a little bit of tax. There really is. You got to give a little bit to the gov.
I have 13 children, so I'm really on good time deciding.
You bet. Yes. Okay. If the cremation, what it is instead of a the traditional full body burial package that I have is about $4,500. The cremation is $2,295.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, instead of $4,500, the cremation is $2,295. Yes?
You talked about transportation provided.
Uh-huh.
So we have lots of equipment.
Okay.
So it would be transportation of the body and the family, or just the body, and we call it a car?
Oh, no. The transportation includes not only the funeral coach or the hearse, but also the family limousine. And then back to here or back to wherever you're going to have some type of a social gathering here in the hall or, for some type of a, memorial celebration. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to leave you stranded. Yeah, somebody's going to hitch. We'll go ahead and do the thumb out. Yes, dear. One thing that's a very good question. She asked about making sure a power of attorney is set up. One thing that a lot of people do not realize is at death, a power of attorney stops. Yeah, it does not continue. Okay, it's going to go to the estate, and so the individuals that are going to be responsible for the estate, spouse first, children, in that regard, they'll go ahead. Well, I wouldn't say that. And again, this is coming from a funeral director, not from an attorney. That's why we only have two names on the marquee. It's Heidemann Hughes, not Heidemann Hughes Heiner. That sounds like a law firm, so we didn't want to do that. but no, I can't say yes or no to not having a power of attorney. I mean, I have one, but it's good through my life and my life only. At death, the power of attorney stops. Mm-hmm. You're welcome. Hi.
My sister had written two wills, I guess, opening and closing of the grave in our hometown and one here in St. George.
No, that'd be tough.
I buried her in Wyoming and tried to get rid of this other thing.
It's, you know what? It's actually quite difficult to sell cemetery property, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
It is. It's not, I mean, you don't just peruse through the want ads or the classifieds and find cemetery property in there. And there's not a whole lot of people looking for it. Not a big market for it.
And they don't want what?
Yeah, very true. Yeah. Yeah. One of the best things you can do is actually just contact the local funeral homes. And what they do is if there is a death where they only need one particular grave and they would prefer to have it at one of the local cemeteries, if we have information on file, we can go ahead and say, okay, there is a single grave available at the, you know, St. George City Cemetery on 700. This particular family owns it. They would like to sell it. Let me contact them and find out. Because we do have those situations that come up. You bring up a very interesting point. A lot of people will go ahead and they'll say, well, Mark, I really, you know, appreciate the information that you've shared and how important it is to ink all that information down, but it's already in my will. Well, when is a will read?
3 days after your death.
Which is usually just after you've already made the funeral arrangements, correct? Yeah. Sometimes it's anywhere from 3 days to 3 weeks after the death. Well, if that's the case, you know, let's say you go ahead and you read in the will that there was to be a cremation and the urn was to be buried at XYZ Cemetery. Well, you went ahead and made at-need arrangements and had a full-body burial at a different cemetery. Kind of tough, isn't it? So having this in addition to the will and your trust documents and the estate documents that you have, it really is the best thing to do. And that I would definitely advise for. Okay? Any others? Yes.
Well, things change, and obviously I'm not alone in coming from some other place. And I know, Mitzi, that's their deal too, but how do you know that wherever you're able to choose it or you're not, your children choose where you might end up in your last days, if there's someone there to comply with what you've done here?
Okay. That's a good question. The only way you can truly guarantee that, okay, is making sure that those, you know, your hopes, dreams, and desires, your wishes are made known. And then from there, they're not only made known to the family members, but you also make it known to, you know, the provider, the funeral director, and the funeral professionals. And then from there, one thing that we actually find, you know, quite often is, let's say that the first responders will go ahead and they'll respond to a home where there's an incident. And they will, you know, basically they take a look through the personal effects in the home, and they also take a look and they find different fridge magnets. And it says, in case of an emergency, this is the contact. Now, I'll actually see a funeral director's business card magnetized to the fridge. And then, of course, they always contact the different funeral homes and say, do you have information on file for this individual? The family believes, or the surviving family members believe, that they've made arrangements, but they don't know what funeral home. And so they do their best to track us all down. Does that make sense? Have I answered that,
yeah,
kind of? Yeah.
That whatever it is, faraway place, would honor the financial commitment you've made here next week.
Okay.
How do we know? They'll say, well, we don't, you know, how is the money transferred?
Now, you're talking about.
Say I paid you.
Okay.
And then
you relocate to a different area?
Relocate, right.
Okay.
Then,
so what it is. What it is what you're doing is the way that we do the pre-funding. The way that we do the pre-funding is through an insurance policy. Okay, it's a whole life policy that you own. It belongs to you. So wherever you go, it goes. Okay, the only caveat or the only catch to that is the cost of a funeral here in St. George, Utah, differs from the cost of a funeral service in Chicago. Okay, so you got to remember, it is portable. It goes wherever you go. So I have guaranteed the price. That's what I have done because it originated with me, okay? But if you're going to relocate to St. Louis, you're going to need to meet with a funeral director or a funeral provider and say, I purchased this funeral from Mark in St. George, Utah. He guaranteed the price. Will you honor that? But because there could be such a price difference, the receiving funeral home or the new provider has the option to take a look at the status of the price guarantee. They may need to make adjustments. You see what I'm getting at?
Okay.
Okay. But again, starting from something instead of starting from nothing is a whole lot better. But that's basically, I mean, I believe that's what you're looking for.
No, that's, that was it. So if,
but again, that insurance policy goes with you wherever you go.
By prepaying to you, then, are there ongoing costs or it's a one-time deal?
You actually have the option to do it. You can actually, many family members will simply go ahead and write a check for the whole thing and say, here it is, I'm done. Or you can go ahead and set it up on monthly, quarterly, semi-annual, or annual installments, and you can separate it up from either 1 year all the way up to 10 years. That's the maximum term I have. And it's all based upon your age and your health.
Okay, so after 10 years, the policy...
The payments stop. Payments stop, and the policy continues to grow. Yeah, so it's not necessarily... Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. And so what it is, so the actual benefit or the death benefit is not level. It actually grows over time. Okay, so if you're going to buy a $5,000 policy to cover a $5,000 funeral, the policy will grow over time, so the death benefit will increase over time. Okay? That way it keeps up with the pace of inflation. So it's not like your standard life insurance policy where you buy a $10,000 life insurance policy, you pay your premiums, and it's a $15,000 or $10,000 life insurance policy that's flat, that you're paying those premiums forever, you know, at least until you're 99. Mine has a limited term. It's either 1 year, 3 years, 5 or 10, depending upon how long you'd like to pay. It fits into your budget. And the death benefit increases over time, continues to go up. Any other questions? Good one, by the way. Yes?
If you put a plan in place,
and
then you die, can the next of kin come in and change your plan, or does that have to go as I would have?
The only thing that they have is they actually do have some protections in place, and I'll create a hypothetical for you. Let's say that, you know, Pebble, you're going to go ahead and create a funeral plan for a traditional service here at the church with full body burial at the cemetery, and it's going to cost $7,000, okay? But your long-lost estranged son is notified that there is a death, shows up and meets with the funeral home and says, oh, that's not what my mom wanted. She wanted immediate cremation, no viewing, no services, no rites, rituals, or ceremony. It's only going to be $1,000 for that, so the $6,000-plus that you have in that account needs to be refunded to me. We don't do that. We can't do that. But they can change, and they can alter the plan a little bit, but what they cannot do is go ahead and say, oh, this is not what Mom wanted. She actually wanted this, and I need that all refunded back to me.
Mm-hmm. But not everybody in my family believes in cremation.
Okay.
So I could see that being a decision that might be challenged, even though I've written it down.
Okay.
Are they able to do that?
The actual, someone that has the right of disposition is going to be the immediate next of kin. So what you're going to do is you're going to ink down your wishes. That is what you want. They're going to use that as a guide. But the ultimate power of disposition rests with your next of kin. So they can make that change. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, you can put it in the will and make it irrevocable. You can do that, absolutely. Well, we'll want to make sure that we do get it and make sure that it's authenticated and validated. That is correct. That is correct. You can go ahead and put it in the will, make it irrevocable, and from there... Not only do we as the funeral home comply with that particular wish, but the family members and the next of kin will comply as well. It's best that we actually do have, or we know exactly, you know, that you do have one and where it is located, so that we can contact the family at the time and say, okay, the important paperwork rests in this particular location, or, you know, this is the law firm that Mom or Dad has retained. And then from there, we would get all the necessary documents before we do the final arrangements. Let me go right over here, Ralph, first.
Just for my interest.
Yeah.
Statistically, what are the whole body burials compared to cremations happening?
Oh, that's a good question.
Here.
Well, I know the numbers here in Washington County. I don't know them nationally. When I started practicing as a funeral director in Washington County, in St. George, that was in 1998, was when I moved here, the cremation rate was 11%. So that was our cremation rate in 1998. Today, near as it makes no difference, it's 36%. So we're increasing, and we're increasing from just the last 15 to 16 years. So right now, Washington County is 36. The entire state of Utah as a whole is about 33% cremation. Like Nevada is almost, I think Nevada is either 75 or 79%. Yeah. Yeah. I think the state that actually has, I think the state that has the lowest cremation rate is actually, is it Louisiana or, Louisiana or Mississippi? I'm not sure off the top of my head. Yeah. But yeah. But the state of Utah is about 33% right now. As a whole, Washington County, 36. Sir?
I just got to make it known to state that what a number of people will do and have done is make sure that I have a copy.
Yeah.
Of your wishes and desires.
Yeah.
That way I can reinforce your wishes.
Yeah. It's very nice to involve your clergy in that. Absolutely. To go ahead and let your family know that you've consulted with your ecclesiastical leader and you've gone ahead, you've inked out your instructions, you've made copies, you've given them to your children, as well as to Reverend Ralph. And from there, it's very, very nice to have all of those particular copies out and so that the family members know when that day does come. Yes?
What happens if something occurs and you decide to pack it up and go to Tahiti or whatever and close your business?
How did you know? Now, if you're talking about the insurance policies and people that have prepaid and done this, yep, all the planning and all that information, I can tell you right now, mortuaries and funeral homes have the highest success rate of any small business that started in the history of the United States. We don't fail. We've never defaulted on an SBA. I can tell you that right now, on an SBA loan. But the truth is, every once in a while, yes, a funeral home does close up and it does pack up and go. But when that happens, there are protections that are in place so that the families and those individuals that have information on file, there is a receiver that will come in that will receive those, and from there, they will be serviced by other funeral homes in the area. The insurance policies, you got to remember, the insurance policies belong to you, and they go with you wherever you go. So you may have prepaid me, but you got to remember your money is with an insurance company, not me. And so the insurance company would, if I was still in business, which I promise I will be, but if I'm still in business, they're going to pay me. If I'm not, they're going to pay the funeral provider that you identify. Good question. It's a hard one for me to answer, but it's a good question. Any others? Well, Mitzi, thank you so much for... Oh, pardon me, one more. Go ahead. Great question. If you're looking at a single headstone, which is, your average size is going to be 12 by 24, flat in the ground, anywhere from about $700, depending upon the granite, all the way up. And you can get them, several thousands of dollars, depending upon the style of the granite that you get. For a double headstone that's either flat or raised in a slant or even the upright monuments, anywhere from $1,700 to probably over, depending upon the cut of the granite and whatnot that you can get custom, they can be anywhere from $5,000 to $7,000. Pardon me?
Or if you're a veteran,
you actually, any honorably discharged veteran of the United States military receives their choice of either a bronze plaque. The current value of the bronze plaque is about $1,200 worth of bronze is what they receive, or a light gray granite or a white marble monument. And the white marble monument sits approximately 3 feet high. It is an upright monument, and the gray granite is a 12 by 24 flat grass marker. And then the bronze monument, of course, is also a flat grass, but it can be bolted onto the back of an upright headstone if you have a double. So if you already have an existing monument, you can do that. And those are provided by the VA. does not include installation, but installation is minimal. When you say the white, what white monument?
The white monument.
Oh, the white monument from the VA? That's actually provided by the Veterans Administration free of charge. Okay. That one I don't know. I've actually never priced one. Because the only time I've ever actually ordered those white marble monuments is from the VA. So I don't know what their current value or cost is. They are. They're beautiful. We better get a pen and a booklet for this young lady right here, and she's going to run it out of ink. Go ahead, dear.
How soon can someone be buried?
Actually, that's a good question. No, it's a real good question. Pending notification to the proper authorities. If there's going to be a burial, if there's going to be a whole body burial, the cemetery requires 24 hours notice, 24 hours working day. So one working day's notice before I can bury in any of the cemeteries. And all our cemeteries here are municipally owned, so it's just through the city cemeteries. For the cremation, every cremation within the state of Utah, the paperwork and the certificate and the permit must be reviewed by the Office of the Medical Examiner. I don't have control over that. So what I do is all that information, that statistical information I talked to you about, I gather all that, I input it into the computer system, I send it up to Salt Lake City. The OME, the Office of the Medical Examiner, will review it, and then they will clear me for cremation. So it all depends upon them. And the fastest I've ever seen them do that is 2 days.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
See, my husband doesn't even want me to notify the kids till after he's buried.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
That is a plan. It's a lousy plan, but it's a plan. Okay, that's what he wants. Let's go ahead and take what he wants, combine it with what you need, and then we'll have a better plan. Okay? All right. Yes, sir. Well, they'll put you through the scanner, and they'll ask what it is.
Yeah.
If you actually send your luggage through the little conveyor belt in the scanner, they'll ask you what it is, and they'll ask for the permit. They'll ask for the paperwork as well. So we give you the permit. Yep.
So if you're taking a full body away from the city, you'd have to have also a shipping container and all that stuff.
Well, it depends on how far we're going. It depends on how far we're going. If we're going 2,500 miles away, you know, and we're going to ship, you know, a full body, you know, 2,500 miles, we're actually going to fly.
Yeah.
But if we're going 400 to 500 miles, we're actually going to drive.
Oh.
So we're just actually going to take and place the casketed remains into the coach or into the utility, you know, the service van, and we'll actually drive to our destination for our, you know, committal or for our graveside services. But if we're traveling further than that, yeah, we do require a shipping container. The airlines require the shipping container. And we actually fly right out of Las Vegas, so we go down to Vegas. In fact, one of my funeral directors is actually in Las Vegas this morning. Actually, he just took a gentleman down there for his services back in Michigan. So, yeah, happens all the time. Shipping containers, not very much.
How common is it here in St. George not to have visitation, but just to have meet the family just before the service?
Oh yeah, back east. I mean, it's unique. Some of the verbiage that we use is a little bit different. We call it viewing visitation. A lot of times, I'll meet with a family that's from the East Coast, and they'll say, "What time do we set up for calling hours?"
Yeah.
And I say, "What in the world are you talking about?" But yeah, every once in a while, what you'll have is either the casketed remains will not be present, and there will be a calling hours at the funeral home for friends and family to come and just to pay their respects. Not necessarily to have a viewing and a visitation. It doesn't happen as often as you might think. It's actually quite rare in our community. a high percentage of the time the casketed remains of the body is there. And whether the casket is open or closed is, you know, kind of, it just varies. That's just family choice. But more often than not, the casket is definitely there at the funeral home or at the church. You guys have asked some great questions. I'm glad. I hope it was easy to ask those questions, because it's, again, it's not a topic that's very easy to talk about. It's a little bit taboo. It's been in the dark for far too long. Let's go ahead, bring it out, put a little sunshine on it. You know, because what it is we're all going to have this conversation at one particular point. Some of us already have had this conversation, and it doesn't really make the highlight reel of your life. It's not the easiest thing to do, okay? It's not what you would call fun. But what we want to do, especially what I want to do, is make sure that you can have this conversation. You know that it's okay. It's all right to know a guy like me, okay? I'm not too bad of a guy, and neither are my partners. They're good guys. Ken, you know them both. Well, you know Brian real well. I don't know if you know Jimmy real well. Do you know Jimmy? Do you? I don't bring up the fact that he's a politician. I mean, that'll tarnish. Come on. Yeah, I mean, I just built myself up, and you go ahead and say, oh, yeah, your business partner's a politician. Here I go. But, yeah, I mean, honestly, both of them are just great guys. I'm very fortunate to work with wonderful gentlemen that actually have their heart in the right place and do the right thing. And we want to go ahead and help you at any turn, any way we can. So if there are additional questions or concerns, or if you would like to know more, please see me afterwards. I'll get you all the information, get you a card, this or that.
Can I ask you to tell me a little bit about your facility?
Yeah. Yeah. What would you like to know?
I don't know. I'm asking.
There was a recent remodel to the existing building. The mortuary chapel is located at 1037 East, 700 South, which is just a block and a half west of the Harmons, same side of the street. The building is recessed back from 700, so there's a very generous parking area. We've done a little bit of some unique landscaping there in the front, where we've got a little waterfall and some landscaping that was done. From there, we added a great room, which is similar to this particular size. It's actually a little bit smaller than this, but our mortuary chapel and our great room would, be able to handle the memorial services, a small funeral service, the celebration of life, or the viewing and visitation. We have the flexibility to set it up with different chair and different configurations for families of any size, so that we can definitely benefit all of the families that we do have the privilege and opportunity to serve. But that was recently completed, as Ken mentioned, and that was done, well, we actually had gentlemen pouring asphalt yesterday because we had a little, that cold, the December frost and the December freeze that we had broke a little water line, and so we actually had to dig up a few things, and we actually finally got that finalized and repaired just yesterday. So I guess you can say it is still brand new, so you get that brand new smell when you walk in. But that was completed just a little while ago. We invite you all to come and take a tour of it anytime you want. Come see it. It's always available for not just funeral gatherings, but any type of gatherings and celebrations. Anyone can use it. I mean, honestly, trust me, I guarantee you there's people in this room that know somebody that was married in a funeral home chapel. Anybody? See? Yeah. People get married in funeral home chapels all the time. It celebrates the death of two single people. I'm going to go ahead and end on that high note. Thank you all very much. I really appreciate it.